Thank you, Katrina, and good morning, everyone. Good morning,
good
Lindsay.
Morning, Katrina.
So as a lead-in to this morning, I thought it might be helpful to reflect on some of what we heard yesterday. And in my mind, that fits into two categories, really. There was a lot of talk about data and organisations becoming data-driven and the inherent challenges in realising the opportunities. And I think it was a gentleman from ANZ that said that we need to move from this unpermissioned surveillance to trusted intelligence. And I think that's a really helpful framing for, you know, that we have to change the data dialogue at the moment. And I was also quite impressed at the gentleman who's ex-Facebook. He listed the number of pivots that Facebook had been through, and it looks like the last pivot is privacy. It was the one on the bottom of his list. So there's hope, right? And then, as well as hearing about data, we also heard about some gloom and doom. I think, you know, this time was we're already at war. And while that's a bit disheartening, I think it's disheartening because it's been going on for too long. So one of the things I wanted to start with as a backdrop to this discussion was some reflections from Kim Cameron, who's my identity hero. He's the godfather of identity for many people. And as far back as 2005, he said very eloquently, it's all a mess. And as well as highlighting that the fact we've trained people to accept this mess, he spoke about this patchwork of identity one-offs. So what do you think? Was Kim right? What's the problem with digital identity?
Well, thank you, Victoria, and good morning. It's rather interesting that we've described it as a patchwork, and I think David Birch in a session yesterday described it as being all broken. I think to call it a patchwork might be giving it more credit than what it actually deserves. I'd prefer to describe it as a hodgepodge. Current approach to digital identity.
Because there's some order in patchwork. Right?
There's some order in patchwork. Okay. My grandmother was a quilter, and some of her patchwork looked pretty damn good, actually. And it was all connected in a way. So even though it was there were different pieces, they were all connected and they came together perfectly. I don't think we have that. We definitely don't have that in digital identity at the moment. What we have is a hodgepodge. And it's not appropriate for the kinds of problems that we need to solve. The way in which technology is evolving here is that it's becoming much more integrated, much more interdependent. We're relying more and more on networks. We can sit at home now and order stuff from one side of the world to the other. We just have to be sitting in front of a screen. We don't have to be physically present to do a transaction. In fact, and as technology evolves, we probably won't even have to sit in front of a screen to do some of this stuff. We'll be able to just vocalise it from within our homes to get things done. So the systems and the services that we're using to do transactions are becoming much more networked, much more interdependent. We don't need to be physically present to do transactions. However, that's not the way in which the digital identity solutions in Australia are set up. They're very much a hodgepodge. Every organisation seems to be trying to do their own thing with any particular kind of coherence amongst them all. You cannot solve a network problem or the issues that come up from networking. And those are the issues around being able to authenticate identity because you're not physically present. You cannot solve a network problem using a non-network solution. We really need to move in a way, our digital identity solution, in a way that reflects the problems that have been thrown up by the architecture of the systems that we're using.
I think that's a really good point. I've just changed the backdrop to the conversation to pull out a statement from the Murray Report, which came out of Financial Systems Inquiry. And, you know, part of me wants to groan and say this was done in 2014 and now we're 5 years ahead. And although there are some nascent signs of hope, which we'll come on and talk about, the fragmentation and the vulnerabilities that the fragmentation create really are there. So given that there's an economic need and also a customer need to do something, I mean, Katrina very rightly pointed out that possibly the most important stakeholders in this whole conversation are not actually in the room. They're the people that rely on online services. Why is it a problem that the Payments Council has chosen to look at?
Well, it's an interesting question. some organization has to take the lead here in order to get the digital identity from the hodgepodge arrangement that we currently have to the networked solution that'll deal with the problems that come up from networked services. Some organization has to take the lead. Now, we need to authenticate ourselves for a number of different kinds of transactions. Increasingly, almost anything we do on a daily basis will need to authenticate our identity. Driver's licenses, health insurance claims, ordering books, all those sorts of things you will need to use some kind of authentication of your identity. We don't necessarily do those kind of things every day. The things we do every day are actually making payments. We do actually, I think it's fair to say that it'd be a rare day that goes by where I haven't made a payment of some kind, even if it's just for buying lunch. So it stands to reason that the organisation or the grouping that should take a leadership role here in trying to pull the hodgepodge of digital identity solutions together in some kind of network solution should be an organisation that has some role in payments. And the Australian Payments Council seems to fit that bill. The council was set up in the support of the Reserve Bank of Australia to deal with strategic issues that come up in the payments industry. And this digital identity is a strategic issue. In order to reap the benefits of some of the innovations and changes that are happening within the payments industry, such as open banking, in order to reap the benefits of those, we need to be able to back it up with a solid system in which we can actually authenticate individuals when they're undertaking a transaction. So if it's a payment system is at the heart of what's going on here, it seems reasonable that the payment system should also take the lead in coming up with a solution here. The fact that the Payments Council has been set up, it's been set up in a particular way, though, that reflects the fact that payments is not necessarily just a finance industry thing. It actually covers a broad range of different transactions and activities, some of which I mentioned earlier. So the council has been set up to reflect that. So the representation around the council comes from the major retailers, banks, of course, telcos, and recently we've just added a technology company representative on the Australian Payments Council. So that reflects the fact that the solution here has to be networked, and it has to be networked across a number of different kinds of industries that are using the transaction, but somebody has to take the lead, and that body should be the body that actually has probably the most interest in reaching a solution here, and that seems to be the banking and payments industry, and that's represented by the Australian Payments Council.
I think I remember when the Payments Council agreed to take on the project as well, there was some recognition of the fact that those organisations are at the front line of the pain caused because we don't have strong authentication mechanisms online. So we look at card-not-present fraud, it was mentioned yesterday, the latest figures come out today actually, and it's grown. And identity theft as well. Lots of identity theft is built on the fact that someone's found your credit card or your driver's license that you've scanned up for a service that you want to subscribe to. I think the other interesting thing about the Payments Council was the authority which enabled it to build partnership with organisations outside. So I see Jonathan in front of me. We partnered with the DTA on the creation of the Trust ID framework, and that was really important. You know, I think around the council table for a while, and because of what Murray said, there was this sense of, well, do we do something with the private sector? Do we work with public sector? And I think we've landed on a very pragmatic starting point of the private sector has some very specific needs and there's some momentum in the market, and we'll create a framework that works for our needs. And it's a meta framework we've created. So I just wanted to highlight that a little bit to bring some clarity around what we mean about a framework. It's not a solution, it's not a scheme. And here we've got our made-up GovID, but the intention is absolutely that a service provider who's providing services into the government is able to provide services into the private sector. And this is an interoperability domain with some provisions around communication protocols, attributes, and the intention is to create competition. Again, yesterday there was this discussion about digital identity as a platform for innovation, and that's absolutely the intention with leading freedom and choice to different solution providers to create services that work for their customers. So I think the Payments Council and the support of the RBA has been really important in bringing a wide set of participants together for that.
It was very clear. I think the Payments Council was very clear on its intention here that it didn't want to actually build the solution itself. It felt as though that the private sector here, that private service providers could very well provide a solution here, but what was lacking was the interoperability between those solutions and between those services. And so the intention of the council was to create a framework that promotes competition and therefore innovation, but at the same time allows interoperability between the services to get away from that hodgepodge, to make sure that we had a networked solution to solve a network a problem that arises from a network.
So we've got the start of what feels like a really strong way forward now. We've got a really strong starting point. Any organisation that offers his services within that framework brings the promise of interoperability. You know, it solves that chicken and egg problem. So if we cast our mind forward a little bit, I mean, what benefits do you think there will be? How will businesses and consumers and government benefit from these ID services? And as a backdrop, I've got a recent stat from Sweden, and everyone loves to talk about the Nordics. I love to talk about the Nordics because they're a success, but there are a number of things that we can't replicate in this country. Digital identity is culturally specific. It depends on the regulations. It depends on the appetite of the different service providers to work together. So we can't just wholesale lift what they've done and do that here. And actually, I'm not sure that even just lifting what they've done in the Nordics would make sense, because we want to create more competition. We want different solutions. We want to compete on innovation. But they've been pretty successful in, there's a tipping point there where the whole reach of the economy has meant that people are using these services. You know, I know some people use them 10, 11 times a day. So how will we reach this point in Australia, and do you think we'll accrue all these benefits in this market?
Well, we certainly hope we'll reach that point in Australia, and the system, the framework has been set up in such a way that certainly will help promote that kind of, to allow us to get that kind of a point here. But it's also the fact that we're asking, that the banks are involved here, and they have probably a significant interest in making a networked digital identity arrangement work properly, is very important. But the council was also, in setting up the framework, was very keen to make sure that this wasn't a finance only or a banking industry only solution here. Even though they might have been taking the lead in putting the framework in place, it was very important to realise that we do use digital identity in other industries, and we needed a framework that was going to allow those other industries to piggyback on the back of whatever it was that the banking and the payment system, the payments industry came up with. And I think you see that here in this graph in the case of Sweden. I think initially when it was a bank-driven solution that they had in place, but eventually when they got to around 2013, other industries started to piggyback on the back of that solution that the banking system in Sweden put in place, and it was when those other industries started to come on board that you see that fairly rapid rise in use. And people started to realise, not just within banking, but the convenience of having the convenience of having a network solution for digital identity and the benefits that flowed from that convenience. So it's when you start to get everybody working together within the framework that you see the growth and use and the benefits start to flow through the community more generally. So banking and the payments industry have a vested interest in making this work, but they also have an interest in making sure that it's available to a broader range of industries. There's another reason here too, I think, in Australia. You mentioned culture, and I know in Australia that part of my role at the Reserve Bank is to oversee the banking services that the Reserve Bank provides to the Australian government. And we know when we look at the kinds of transactions that take place that there's a reticence in the Australian community of people giving the government information, particularly banking information. If I go back in my history at the Reserve Bank, back in the days in which people used to make payments by cheque, payments to the government by cheque, they'd pay their tax. They would write all sorts of things on the cheque. Some of them I can't really repeat here in polite company, but the cheque would be made out to that so-and-so at the taxation office, right? With the whole intention of just saying, we don't like giving you any information, but we have to, so here you are. So a culturally in Australia, there is a little bit of a reticence about the government. We like the government to give us some assistance, but we don't necessarily want the government to have too much information about us. So it's important from a cultural point of view that whatever framework we set up here allows people to use private sector service providers, but at the same time, to the extent that they might need to provide a digital identity or some kind of digital authentication of who they are to the government, then the system should allow them to actually access the government agency under permission to access that information from a commercial service provider.
Yeah.
So it kind of caters for the cultural aspects of digital identity, which we find here in Australia. I also think that there's that what we find here too is that as we progress in technology, what we're finding is that there's two parts to any service delivery. There is basically the competitive component, and there is the utility or the networked component. And often that network component needs to be provided through collaboration of the industries and companies that are in the industry. But the competitive component needs to be a competitive component. It needs to be services provided by a number of different organisations
to drive momentum.
To keep prices down, to keep the innovation there. And we want companies to compete like crazy at that competitive level, but we want them to collaborate like crazy to provide the network services. If the distinction between those two things isn't necessarily well drawn, then what you find is that the competitiveness sometimes, or it either isn't well drawn or just not very specific at all, then what you find is that the competitive layer tends to creep into the utility layer. And so you'll get companies saying, well, we're not going to collaborate on the utility because our competitors are using it as well. At that point, there needs to be a very clear distinction between the competitive layer and the utility layer, and often that comes about either through regulation, and that could be self-regulation. It could be official regulation that comes from an official regulator like the Reserve Bank or ASIC, or it could be just that or it could be there through law. But something has to make sure that network layer is provided and it's done in a collaborative way in order for the competitive layer to work very well. And it's when you get that distinction happening and becoming very clear that you then get a significant increase in the way in which it's used.
Many of the discussions, as you know, in terms of building this framework were about where's that line between compete and collaborate, and through, you know, working groups of focusing on technical questions, business questions, governance questions, we worked out where that line is. And I think it's really important. You need enough to collaborate on to stimulate the market, but you need enough as a prize in it to compete, to keep it going. So hopefully we found the right balance, Lindsay.
I think we haven't had that right balance up until fairly recently, and hopefully with the Trust ID framework, we've now got that point, or at least created the preconditions for it to be well-defined.
Thank you. I think we can have some questions now. I don't think the microphones, but it's a small room and everyone's got loud voices. Yes?
Yesterday there was quite a lot of talk around this networking problem. I don't understand what networking problem means. So it's a very big sort of deep dive. That's a bit jargony. And,
so why do we say identity is a network business? It's that... Sure, it's a two-sided market thing. So if you think the easiest analogy is a card, so you don't care who's given you your bank card, you know that you can walk into a shop and pay. And there are technical specifications that make that possible, and there it's as a governance layer so that if something goes wrong, the right people get paid. And so a two-sided market requires people on both sides of the markets to do similar things technically, and to, and you need a governance layer for it. And the, you know, a retailer wouldn't accept a payment card if no one had that card, and no one would want a card if they couldn't use it anywhere. So one of the challenges in this market with digital identity, you know, I think Australia Post has done an incredible job of championing the topic, and they've put a lot of money investing in services. It was very hard for them to convince anyone to accept their identity because they hadn't enrolled enough people, and they couldn't enroll people because there was nowhere to use it. So that's that two-sided market network problem.
So, so in terms of the payment accounts, if you're talking about the you need critical mass to actually get on board and get people to take up the service, what are you guys doing in that space to draw people to be into that?
So the framework specifies an interoperability domain. So the Trust ID framework, the Payments Council has just created a Trust ID framework.
So, it's basically a set of rules. If you want to think of it as a set of rules around if you're a service provider and you want to provide digital identity services, then what we're asking is that you sign up to those rules. And one of those rules is that you make your system interoperable with somebody else. Somebody else's system.
Well, so you agree to accept everyone's identity. You agree to process transactions from all service providers who meet the requirements of the framework.
So,
sorry, I didn't hear that last.
Where are the standards that describe what those things are?
In the framework documentation. So there's a 200-page document that describes the framework, and as you would expect, we haven't invented some weird Australian standard for identity. It's all based on quite a lot borrows from CDR, Consumer Data Right. Lots of what Data 61 has done is on GitHub, so it uses OpenID and all the standard protocols, and it draws on TDIF and on NIST as well.
So the best way to think of this is that when you go to make a payment using a card, whether it's a credit card or a debit card, and you go to the retailer, you don't see a number of different terminals. You don't see one for MasterCard, you don't see one for Visa, one for Amex, one for UnionPay or whatever it is. You only see one terminal, and that's because they've made those, that particular network has become interoperable. You only need to tap on one terminal. Depending on who your service provider is, the payment will go. Similarly for digital identity, so what we don't want is for you to actually have to go over there and lodge your digital identity, go over there and lodge your digital identity, go over to somebody else who you're doing a transaction with. You only need to do it for one person. But the network, if you need to provide your digital identity to a company that uses a different service provider, they'll be able to access, with your permission, information from your digital identity service provider.
Yeah, yesterday this came up as well, was the concept of the payment card that would be use that as an analogy. However, I could just pick up anybody's payment card and I can swipe my card pass anywhere. Digital identity surely has to be more rigorous and wise.
The analogy only extends so far. So that analogy is to describe the network effect. It's not used to describe the authentication around the use cases. So it doesn't.
Got some stuff to talk about how you're trying to build that rigor so that we can get away from the anybody can pick up my identity card and just start flashing it around the place.
Yeah, but perhaps in some contexts it's an unhelpful analogy. But I think the intention was to describe the network effects, and in fact the framework has really clear specifications around onboarding and authentication and verification. But I'm really happy to follow up with you afterwards. It sounds like you've got some really great questions. So
And I can also see lots of hands, and unfortunately we're out of time, but as I expected, this conversation was going to spark a lot of interest because we're at the beginning of the beginning in terms of putting down that framework, and as Victoria said, there is more work to do from here. I don't know if it's possible after the break, if you will be here, Victoria and Lindsay, to answer some more questions, because I can see there are more questions for us to continue the conversation. But for now, I'm sorry, we need to wrap up and move into the next panel. Thank you very much for the work that has been done.